VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Friends, thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today. When you take a sincere look at our world, I'm sure you'll come up with the conclusion it's a world in turmoil. I mean, all you have to do is mention the names of various nations, and immediately you have pictures popping up in your mind. Let me mention just a few. Russia, Ukraine, North Korea, Iran, China, Taiwan. I mean, some are antagonistic toward one another, yet others are forming alliances that should be a wake-up call to this world. And yet in some countries, there's also an awakening taking place where the people are rising up and saying, we're not going this direction any longer. Well, joining us today as we conduct this overview of world affairs, we welcome back Alex Newman. He's an award-winning international freelance journalist. Alex is an author, a researcher, an educator, and a consultant, senior editor for The New American, co-author of Crimes of the Educators, and author of Deep State, The Invisible Government Behind the Scenes, and also of Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. He's a founder of Liberty Sentinel. Alex, thanks for joining us today.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Jim.
So, Alex, I'd like to begin with Russia. It's been more than 2 years now that Russia has launched its attack upon Ukraine. Is it just me, or does it appear that there's just no end in sight to what's transpiring here?
No, it's not just you, Jim. I think there are very powerful vested interests on all sides that hope to not just drag this conflict out indefinitely, but ultimately turn it into something even bigger, more significant, more dangerous. And there are several reasons why I say that. In fact, early on, I said right when this conflict broke out that I wouldn't be surprised to see it mushroom out into basically another World War III. And the more time goes on, the more that becomes likely. You see now the Biden administration has now given the Ukrainians permission to use American weapons to strike inside of Russian territory. You see all of these different troubling warning signs that this may spiral into something far greater, bringing in all of NATO, potentially bringing in the Eurasian Economic Union, the Communist Chinese government. And, you know, I think a lot of Americans don't understand. They think of Russia as basically a two-bit powerless nation. They may not have a very powerful economy. They may not have a lot of the advantages that the United States has in terms of technology, but they do have enormous numbers of nuclear bombs, probably significantly more than the United States has. And when you combine that with Communist China, I think Americans need to realize that what's happening here is these people are playing with fire, and it is, I believe, in a very real sense, putting all of us at risk.
You know, and just last week, we have the Russian President Vladimir Putin and the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un signed this agreement in which they're pledging to really to come to the aid of one another if there's some aggression from any adversary. What is the significance, Alex, of this agreement between them, and who is this sending a message to?
Well, I think it's clearly directed at the United States and the Western world. And I would say, you know, to start with, I don't believe this is anything new. Yes, the formalized agreement with the fancy meeting and the cameras, that's new. But the fact that the regime in North Korea was a close ally and a close partner of Vladimir Putin, and really a proxy of Communist China, has been clear for a very long time. And right at the outset, I want to bring up a Soviet defector, Jim. You and I have talked about him briefly before, but I think it helps set the stage for what I think is happening here. And back in the 1970s, we had a very, very important Soviet defector, maybe the most important Soviet defector, come to the United States through Finland. His name was Anatoly Golitsyn, and he told the federal government, he told the CIA, he told the FBI what he believed was coming. He had worked in Department D of the KGB. Department D was the disinformation department. And he warned that the Soviets were engaged in long-range disinformation planning. And he gave several very clear examples of this. One was the alleged Sino-Soviet split. He said there never was a Sino-Soviet split. That was a fraud designed to dupe Western governments or allow Western governments to build up one side, allegedly at the expense of the other. So let's help China to drive a wedge between China and the Soviet Union, when behind the scenes they were two peas in a pod all the way. And we had a series, actually, in these books that he ended up releasing after the federal government refused to listen to what he was saying. He published two books that he ended up giving to the American people. One was called New Lies for Old. The other was called The Perestroika Deception. And in these books, he outlined a series of over 200 very, very specific predictions about what he believed was coming. Of those 206 specific predictions, about 200 have now come true. Some of them so true, it's hard to imagine this guy could have known these things. He warned that there would be a collapse of the Berlin Wall. He warned that the Soviet Union was going to pretend to collapse, that it would be a phony collapse of the Soviet system. He even gave names of some of the people who would be involved in this. He named an individual by the name of Lech Walesa in Poland, who he said would lead a fake anti-communist revolution and would ultimately end up bringing down the communist system in Poland. Well, today we know that that's exactly what happened, and we also know from the Soviet archives that Lech Walesa's KGB code name was Bolek, right? He was on the KGB payroll. So what he predicts at the end of this whole process, the final prediction, if you will, the grand finale, is what he calls the Second October Revolution, where the Kremlin and the communist Chinese will work together to utterly and completely destroy the Western world and try to bring all of humanity under a totalitarian one-world system. And he's got a very, very good track record so far. And so when you see what's happening with Russia and North Korea, when you see what's happening with Russia and China, they recently signed the Unlimited Partnership, they called it, as the translation. I think this stuff was predicted long ago, and I think there's a very real chance that he was correct in his analysis. Now, he didn't have all the pieces of the puzzle. He was trapped in the Soviet Union, where he didn't have access to Western information. But he had a very good sense of what they were planning, and I think we're watching some of this play out right this very moment, Jim.
So with China, that you run into our discussion here, I mean, recently, I mean, they've been trying to organize some kind of peace talks between Russia and Ukraine. Recently, the Ukraine Peace Summit reportedly fell flat. China said, you know, don't look here. You know, don't blame us for this. What is China's role in all of this? Does China really want to see peace between Ukraine and Russia? Or are they? Is this kind of a backdoor approach for their support of Russia?
Well, this is clearly a backdoor approach for their support of Russia. But even more than that, I think the communist Chinese government now is trying to assume the role that the United States government has held basically since the end of World War II, give or take a few years. They want to be seen as the responsible adult in the room, you know, telling the spoiled children to quit throwing temper tantrums and come to the table and negotiate. And unfortunately, in a lot of parts of the world, this marketing campaign is seeing great success. But I think we need to be very clear. You cannot trust the communist Chinese. These are people who have slaughtered 100 million of their own people, not including unborn babies. And so they're putting on a face right now to make them look like, you know, they want peace, they want prosperity. They have lots of nice little slogans that they have developed. Win-win situation, right? You hear this all the time. China is just interested in win-win partnerships. But what's happening, with the support, by the way, of very, very powerful people in the Western world, is that communist China is being groomed to become the new dominant player on the world stage. And also, I believe, and I articulated this for the first time over a decade ago in a cover story we did in the New American Magazine, they are also the role model for the new world order that the globalists say that they are building. It needs to move away from the American system, from their perspective, with the ideas of God-given rights and so, and toward the communist Chinese system, where the individual, the church, the family, companies, everything is subjugated under the governing power, the civil government.
And yet we get sometimes the idea that China may be imploding from within economically. What is happening to their economy? I just saw it reported yesterday by the Epoch Times that China's home sales plunged over 30% in 5 years. Seems to be a lot of economic uncertainty in China right now.
There is a lot of economic uncertainty in China, and frankly, their economic system is a mess. It's not communism anymore in the true sense, although China is governed by the Communist Chinese Party, which governs that nation with a ruthless iron fist. But it is not communism in the true sense of the term. It has really transformed itself much more into kind of fascism and technocracy than real Marxism. Because what happened is these evildoers, they realized that Karl Marx may have been brilliant in some ways, but he was wrong. I mean, the economic ideas that he laid out were not just incorrect, they were utterly ridiculous. And when these ideas have been tried, what happens is an enormous amount of wealth gets destroyed. And an economy can only sustain so much wealth destruction before the whole thing collapses, and then the ruling Communist Party is overthrown and likely imprisoned. And so what they've done is they've adapted here. The Communist Chinese, with help from the World Economic Forum, have restructured their economic system to be more of a fascistic model. Now, there are still very, very important elements of state control. Almost all of the major companies in China, if not all, are majority owned by the regime, right? But they have introduced market mechanisms. They've introduced prices. They've introduced profit motive. They've introduced stock markets and buying and selling, things like this, not just to keep it afloat, but to enable the Communist Chinese economy to create enough wealth to help this system basically perpetuate itself like a cancer and take over the world. So I do believe the Communist Chinese economy is on a very unstable footing, but I think the United States economy is in an even more vulnerable and more dangerous position. And I believe when you combine the escalating global chaos that may end up in a world war, combined with the economic chaos that we're going to see in the years ahead, it's a perfect recipe, a perfect storm to bring about major geopolitical and economic changes that would have been inconceivable prior to these massive crises that are coming.
Alex Newman with us here today from The New American, thenewamerican.com, and libertysentinel.org. It seems when it comes to real estate, though, that China has no problem with acquiring real estate here in the United States. I just saw a map, a real estate map from the New York Post over the weekend of Chinese-owned farmland next to 19 U.S. military bases. Really ought to be an alarming threat to our national security, should it not?
It is an alarming threat to our national security. Frankly, Communist China poses an existential threat to the national security of the United States, and this never could have happened without the deliberate participation of people at the highest levels of our government. Our military is now essentially useless without Communist Chinese help. We literally cannot keep our Air Force jets in the sky. We cannot keep our Navy ships out at sea. We cannot keep our submarines underwater without components only manufactured in Communist China, without minerals that are only available through Communist China. This is a situation that was allowed to develop. And frankly, I think it's a good time to bring out the T word. I think we are facing treason. You know, Congress has now found the documents showing that the Biden family has received enormous sums of money directly from the CCP and key operators for the CCP. But of course, this is not unique to Biden. It goes back many, many generations. There have been Republicans and Democrats involved, very much including George H.W. Bush, Mr. New World Order himself, very much including Bill Clinton, and very much including all the way back to David Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger. I mean, these are the men who built up Communist China with American technology, American capital, American innovation, and made it into the enormous global threat that it is today.
Friends, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Our guest today, Alex Newman, and just kind of providing an overview of our world affairs today. Quick break coming upon us, and we're going to pick up also with, we were just talking about China, so what's happening with China and Taiwan at this point. And also we'll be taking a look at the Middle East and matters that are unfolding there in the number, well, the growing number of countries right now that are recognizing a Palestinian state. And then there are elections that are happening in many nations and shakeup that's happening in a number of countries. So lots to unfold here in the next segment. So stay with us. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, where do blind cave fish come from?
Chris, it seems that some fish get trapped in caves living in total darkness. They have no use for their eyes, thus their eyes atrophy and no longer develop. But some of these fish are virtually identical to fish that live in lakes and streams nearby, which do have eyes. I've long wondered what would happen if you took some of these blind fish and raised them in a lit environment. Would their eyes begin to develop? The fish still have the genes for eyes, but they're never switched on. Thus, the eyes are never expressed. I've often wondered if they're interfertile with the sighted fish. This seems to be a good research project, but as far as I know, the blind fish are protected, and no such research has been done. Chris, fish were created on day 5 of Creation Week, and that happened back in Genesis.
For more information, you can find us on the web at www.icr.org.
It's a World Affairs Overview on Crosstalk today. Alex Newman is with us. He is author of Indoctrinating Our Children to Death, also Deep State, the Invisible Government Behind the Scenes. And you'll find out more about his writings at libertysentinel.org and thenewamerican.com. Alex, we're talking about China, and again, a full program, a week of programs could be done just on China alone. But let's look at China and Taiwan. Taiwan is a new leader now. Is the threat of China's invasion imminent, or is there a pause in tensions there?
Well, I do believe a communist Chinese invasion of Taiwan is coming. The question is when. And right now, it looks like communist China is working to prepare its military to be able to take on the Western world, the United States, a significantly weakened United States, NATO, Japan, South Korea, etc. And once they are ready, I have no doubt that they will go ahead and invade Taiwan. They've been preparing for this for a long time. They now have a very, very significant military force. In fact, Xi Jinping himself has said that within the next few years, communist China will have what he describes as a first-class military. He did claim that the communist Chinese military would be able to take on the West by 2040. I suspect that's disinformation. They already have all of our most advanced military technology. Mm-hmm. They've either stolen it through espionage or purchased it through bribery or obtained it through other methods, sending female agents to develop relationships with males in the United States, like Congressman Eric Swalwell, for example. So they've been doing this very methodically, very strategically. And when the time is right, I have no doubt they will invade Taiwan. And I think that what will happen at that point is still a little bit of a wild card. I don't think anybody fully knows, not the United States government, not the communist Chinese. U.S. policy officially has always been to neither confirm nor deny that we would defend Taiwan if communist China invaded. But certainly the Philippines, Japan, South Korea would understand that, hey, Taiwan's going to be the next Hong Kong and we're going to be the next Taiwan if we don't put a stop to this. Mm-hmm. So it could very, very easily lead to a global conflagration. I suspect that is probably part of the goal. And they've allowed this situation to exist. They've allowed it to fester very deliberately. The only reason why China was enslaved by the communists was because subversives within the U.S. government intended to do that. They betrayed our ally Chiang Kai-shek, who fought Japan alongside the United States in World War II. They actually put an arms embargo on him. Then, when the Free Chinese leadership under Chiang Kai-shek had to flee to Taiwan, they did everything possible to support Chairman Mao. The New York Times described him as an agrarian reformer. I mean, at every step of the way, the globalists, the deep staters, as they're known in the popular lexicon today, did everything possible to betray the Free Chinese, who today live on Taiwan, and to empower the communist Chinese, who today enslave the mainland. And I believe they left this there like a ticking time bomb, for the purpose of eventually having that bomb blow up. And I think they have several ideas in mind as to where this is going to go.
I'd like to get your perspective on another issue, and that is, where do you believe the U.S.'s responsibility is in all of this? I mean, I see the Biden administration just approved the sale of $360 million worth of drone missiles and other military equipment to Taiwan. We know what's going on with Ukraine. You mentioned some of that earlier, and even that the U.S. have been delivering air defense systems to Ukraine by delaying shipment to other allies. What responsibility, like through your perspective, do we have to Ukraine? Do we have to Taiwan?
Well, that's a very good question. And I think we go back to the advice of our founding fathers, the founding fathers of the United States, that their advice was very clear. We should have no entangling alliances with foreign governments. We should not get involved in the foreign quarrels, as the founders referred to them, of Europe and other parts of the world. And we really ought to be minding our own business. One of the lines that several of them were known to have said is that, we pursue peace and friendship and commerce with all nations and entangling alliances with none. And I think generally speaking, that's a very good policy, especially at this point in American history where the U.S. Is significantly weakened. We now have more debts, the U.S. government, of course, than any other entity in all of human history. And what we have seen is a long pattern of U.S. involvement leading to terrible outcomes for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I described earlier how China was enslaved by the communists as a direct result of bad American foreign policy. That never would have happened organically if the United States had not actively intervened to help the communists rise to power. The same thing happened in Cuba. The same thing has happened over and over and over again throughout history. And so, unfortunately, and it pains me to say this, but unfortunately, American involvement overseas has decimated freedom movements, has resulted in the enslavement of multiple nations. And really, I don't see very many redeeming qualities to this. So I think we would probably be wise at this point in our history to follow the advice of our founders and just stop meddling overseas. We can't afford it. The U.S. government tends to make a bigger mess than already exists. And from my perspective, that's probably the wisest course of action right now for the United States government is to stop playing world policeman and to allow other countries to determine for themselves what they're going to do.
And I'm sure you've heard it countered, Alex, so some would say that we're in a different world today, that if the U.S. does not intervene, that it would put our own national security at risk. How do you respond?
Yeah, I don't think that's true. I think the biggest reason our U.S. national security is at risk is because of the foreign policy of the United States, and ultimately because we have angered God. When you look at this from a biblical lens, the U.S. government is now spreading evil all over the world.
Yep.
It's bad enough that we're doing these things at the border, slaughtering 70 million unborn babies, making a mockery of marriage, castrating little boys. I could go on. Everybody listening knows the list of things. Just that alone is more than enough to bring down God's judgment on this nation. But then you add to that, you compound that problem by trying to force other countries to do the same thing, and you realize, God's judgment is not going to sleep forever. The more the U.S. government does these types of things around the world, the more Americans do these kinds of, the U.S. government or the United States is the largest exporter of pornography in the world. The more that the United States continues to do this, the more we are heaping up judgment for ourselves. And, I don't claim to know what God has in store for us, but I don't think it would be implausible at all for God to use a foreign nation or a coalition of foreign governments to utterly punish the United States for all the wickedness that it has perpetrated, not just here, but around the world.
And haven't we seen an example of what you just talked about here recently with the petrodollar, Saudi Arabia, where Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State, saying every opportunity he gets, he's pushing the LGBT agenda, with the Saudis, and they're frankly fed up with it. They don't want it. And now this agreement that's been there for 50 years, all of a sudden we're changing that aspect and the petrodollar at risk?
Yeah, that's another hugely significant story right there. We are entering, I think, the final days of the U.S. dollar as the global reserve currency, and there's no doubt that it's partly because the U.S. government has abused its position. It has stolen, and I'm no Putin apologist. In fact, I think Putin is a very, very ruthless individual who has consistently perpetrated evil. And I think he needs to repent and trust in Christ. So I'm certainly no Putin apologist, but the United States government and other Western governments have stolen, and that's the only word you can use here, they have stolen hundreds of billions of dollars from his government and ultimately from the Russian people. And so other governments look at this, the Saudis, for example, and again, I'm no apologist for the Saudi regime either. They're very ruthless, brutal persecutors of Christians, et cetera. But what the U.S. government has done and continues to do should show any nation, any government, that you cannot trust the United States. You do not want them having that kind of power over your economy when it comes to the U.S. dollar. And so I think now, as a result of this ending of this 50-year agreement with the Saudis and other developments, the emergence of the BRICS and things like this, we're very realistically looking at the prospect of the dollar losing its status as the global reserve currency, potentially even within the next few years. And that is going to be an economic calamity for the United States of America, unlike I think any of us, or at least most of us, have ever lived through in this country.
Alex Newman with us today again, thenewamerican.com and libertysentinel.org. As we talk about the Middle East, we know Israel's war against Hamas looks like it's going to be quickly perhaps escalating into a more direct conflict with Hezbollah right now. We have we also have Armenia that is recognizing a Palestinian state. This has failed at the UN level, but now more and more countries, Norway and Ireland, Spain, I understand some nine countries in all are recognizing a Palestinian state. Your comments on this region?
Yeah, there's so much that could be said, and I think we should start with the obvious fact that giving the Arabs one more nation state is not going to bring about peace. In fact, it's not really going to change much of anything, except it's going to make it more difficult for Israel to be able to operate and continue to exist in peace. You know, the Arabs already have dozens of nation states. They've got Iraq, they've got Syria, they've got Jordan, they've got Egypt. The list goes on. They've got Saudi Arabia, they've got the United Arab Emirates, they've got Yemen, they've got Oman. I mean, we could list Arab nation states for a while. But giving them one more is not actually going to fix any of these issues. There is no real such thing as a Palestinian nation. This is really a modern invention. Mm-hmm. And I think these governments are making a major mistake by doing this. But I think this is all calculated, right? I do believe there is a deliberate agenda to put the world into conflict. And, of course, I think on one hand, it's a satanic agenda, and that doesn't mean that everybody participating or working toward this agenda necessarily understands the full implications, the origin, the real purpose. But ultimately, I think this is a diabolical agenda to have enormous numbers of people die. And frankly, I don't think these people really care whether it is Russia-Ukraine or China-Taiwan or Jews versus Arabs, Israel versus so-called Palestine. I don't think any of them really care where the conflict breaks out. It may even be all three at the same time. Obviously, each of these is primed for a supernova. And out of that, we know that the globalists see these types of conflicts, these types of wars, as a very, very effective mechanism for speeding up the cause of globalism. And we know that because they've said so.
Right.
Back in the early 1960s, the State Department hired Lincoln Bloomfield to put together a very important report. This was an official State Department document. Anybody can read it. It was called The World Effectively Controlled by the United Nations. And what Bloomfield concludes in this document is that the fastest way to bring about a one-world system, a world effectively controlled by the United Nations, as the title of the report says, is to use war or the threat of war to dislodge people's traditions, cultures, etc. Here's the direct quote from the report. It said the fastest way to achieve this would be a grave crisis or war to bring about a sudden transformation in national attitudes sufficient for the purpose. And he says the conditions most likely to accelerate the process include a crisis, a war, or a brink of war situation so grave or commonly menacing that deeply rooted attitudes and practices are sufficiently shaken to open the possibility of a revolution in world political arrangements. And so I think that's what's happening here. We're watching the world be set up for another global conflagration. If we look at what happened after World War II, we see a very clear example of this. In the aftermath of World War II, we got the United Nations, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the European Coal and Steel Community, which gave birth to the European Union. Virtually all of the institutions of globalism that we know today were birthed in the aftermath of either World War I or World War II. And so they think a third world war would be the perfect opportunity to go ahead and formalize the rest of this process.
Oh, my. I can just hear the voice of Klaus Schwab, never let a crisis go to waste. back in just a minute, Alex Newman, our guest here today on Crosstalk and World Affairs Overview. But, friends, we're also going to take a look at some of the shakeups that are taking place as well with various elections that have been held in various nations and a look at our own back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
Did you know that the first act of Congress was to open with prayer, or that the Declaration of Independence mentions God four times? That George Washington's first order to his troops was to live and act as becomes a Christian soldier? Or that Noah Webster said education is useless without the Bible? These and over 2,000 other quotes revealing the godly heritage of America can be found in America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations by William Federer. This reference volume of over 800 pages cites founding fathers, presidents, statesmen, constitutions, and court decisions. It's an excellent reference guide to know our heritage.
Available in soft cover for a donation of $30 or hard cover for a donation of $40 to VCY America. Call 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America with an overview of world affairs taking place today. And friends, there's so much going on in the world. Haven't really touched into African nations. And my, the persecution that's going on in Nigeria right now, and those who are following a religious view that's opposite Islam are persecuted. They're being killed. They're being beheaded. We see villages that have been burned and mass persecution taking place. In many, many locations. So there is much that we are not getting to today. But, Alex, I'd like to also focus on some of the shakeups that are happening in various elections. And I guess looking at the calendar today, which is June 25, I want to remind those that are listening in New York right now and Colorado and Utah about elections that are taking place, primary elections in your state today. And we encourage you always to be informed and to cast a prayerful vote as you go to the polls. But, Alex, let's take a look at, before we get to our own U.S. election, the matters that are coming up, what's happening in some other nations right now. And there are some shakeups that are taking place. And, my, we're seeing some new directions coming from a country like Argentina. I mean, they're charting a path right now with Javier Milei that is going just totally opposite from where they were headed.
Yeah, it's very encouraging what just happened in Argentina, because Argentina has unfortunately gone much further down the path that the United States is going down than the United States itself has in many ways. Right? You can actually see the history of Argentina in their constitution. They once had a constitution very similar to the American constitution, and then as time goes on, they add all these new and invented rights, like you have a right to food and a right to health care and a right to government-funded college and all the same things that they're advocating for here. And as that happens, the country gets poorer and poorer and poorer. People don't realize Argentina was one of the richest countries in the world just a century ago. And so something terribly wrong happened there. They moved away from biblical principles. They moved more towards socialism. And a lot of people assumed that it was just too far gone. In fact, you look at Latin America today, the vast majority of the nations of Latin America are governed by members of a Marxist alliance called the Foro de Sao Paulo, founded by Fidel Castro, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, the Marxist wannabe dictator of Brazil, the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, and also the FARC, the Marxist narco-terrorists in Colombia. And Argentina was solidly in that camp, and yet they decided to go to hand-counted paper ballots in the last election. And lo and behold, a guy who wants to dramatically shrink the size and the scope of government comes into power, a guy who wants to stop the crazy money printing, which is really just theft of people's resources, masquerading as a complex, difficult-to-understand central banking phenomenon. And really great things are happening there now. In fact, very amazingly, just over the last week or so, he was able to get a lot of his proposed reforms through the Argentinian Congress, which people said he would not be able to do. So what's happening in Argentina right now is very encouraging. It actually provides a roadmap for many European nations and potentially even the United States and Canada, which are headed very unfortunately in the wrong direction. But there is a way out. And so Javier Milei, I think, is doing great things. He's on the right side on so many issues, including abortion and other things. And so hopefully the United States and Europe and Canada and Australia and New Zealand will look at Argentina and say, wow, we can come back from the brink if we try.
And speaking of elections, some shakeups taking place in Europe.
Yeah, what happened recently in the European parliamentary elections was very interesting. You know, I'll start off by saying the media is putting out a lot of disinformation and misinformation about these elections. One of the biggest points of misinformation is that this was a victory for the far right. And they don't say it explicitly, but the implication is that these are basically Nazis. These are basically goose-stepping national socialists who like Hitler. And nothing could be further from the truth. These are by and large, parties that want smaller government, less government intervention in the lives of citizens, lower taxes. Of course, they do want the borders sealed. They are tired of the mass migration. They're tired of the globalist project to smash sovereignty first among the European nations and then around the world. So this was a very significant expression of the popular sentiment, which is we're tired of the globalism, we're tired of the big government, we're tired of the technocratic economic system, and we want to go back to what we had before, freer markets, the nation state, even Christian culture in a very real sense. Now, I will add the caveat there that the European Parliament is not a parliament in the traditional sense that normal Western people understand. It's much more akin to a rubber stamp than it is to a sovereign legislative body. The European Union has what's called the European Commission, which is basically a hybrid of the legislative and executive branch, right? As if the White House in the United States also had legislative powers. And so the European Parliament on its own is not going to be able necessarily to change the direction of the European Union. They're not going to really be able to roll back a lot of these assaults on sovereignty or even the open borders. But it is significant nevertheless because it shows what European voters are thinking. And even European voters who are far more secular and far more friendly to big government and socialism than the United States are sick of this stuff.
The impact of the new president of Italy, this would be Meloni, prime minister, that is, Giorgia Meloni. I understand, I mean, at least it's being reported that she was able to stop some of the abortion mechanisms from going into, some of the agreements here with the G7 nations.
Yeah, that was really encouraging. The G7 governments wanted to, as usual, enshrine abortion and what they call reproductive health care and reproductive rights, and which is just code word for abortion and contraception and sterilization and other things. And thankfully, because of Giorgia Meloni, the prime minister of Italy, that stuff was not included in the final version that was released. And a lot of the pro-abortion forces were very upset with her, which is very good. I will say about Meloni that she campaigned basically as a very conservative Christian. She campaigned for biblical values. She campaigned for national sovereignty. She campaigned for stopping the European Union. And unfortunately, in government, she has not been nearly as firm on these issues as she was on the campaign trail, which is, of course, very normal. It's what we expect nowadays from politicians. But nevertheless, this was encouraging that there are still at least a handful of leaders across the Western world that are willing to draw a line in the sand and say, no, we're not going to be enshrining the mass murder of babies into these final documents.
Yeah, yeah. We just saw the recent election of Mexico's first woman president as well. What impact do you see coming from her leadership there? Is the borders going to remain an issue there? What do you see as her political viewpoint?
Well, she's basically the handpicked protege of AMLO, López Obrador, the most recent president of Mexico, who is basically more radical than the radical socialists that Mexico has been governed by for generations. And, you know, Mexico is very near and dear to my heart. I've spent more time living in Mexico than any other place in the world. I grew up there. I love Mexico very much. I'm a permanent resident there, the equivalent of a green card. And so this is something that I'm quite familiar with. And Mexico has been governed by socialists and leftists for basically the last century, going back to Elias Plutarco back a century ago. And unfortunately, that is not going to be changing. And AMLO was actually even more radical than these organizations on their own, right? So AMLO is very closely affiliated with the group I mentioned earlier, the Foro de Sao Paulo, the Marxist network that now rules the vast majority of Latin America. And what we're going to see under this new president is a continuation of the policies that AMLO brought in, which, by the way, from an American perspective, ought to concern all of us as well. One of my recent articles I did for The New American was about AMLO openly calling now for an EU-style government over North America. And so that's going to continue.
We just lost Alex. We're going to attempt to connect with him. And Cheryl, I believe he's going to try and call in on our line there. Alex Newman with us here today on Crosstalk. And giving us an overview of the world and talking about Mexico right now. And as he was talking about AMLO working to bring about in essence, a North American Union. And this is something that we saw that was trying to happen under the Bush 43 administration as well, to bring about this union between the United States and Canada and Mexico. And certainly very troubling to see the actions and positions that are taken there. And We are looking to get Alex back with us here today on the broadcast. And Cheryl, he's going to be calling us here on the number here. So looking forward to Alex reuniting with us on the broadcast today. Also, friends, just a reminder, as we said just moments ago, Utah, Colorado, New York, the significant elections taking place. And certainly there's an eye as to whether Representative Congressman Bowman is going to get back into the U.S. Congress here as well. That is something to be taking a look at, and whether or not that squad is going to be expanding or not. And so we continue to monitor that situation as well. Our phone number to Crosstalk here today is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Alex Newman, our guest here today for Crosstalk, and seeking to reconnect with him here on the broadcast, but critical times in which we live as we take this overview of this world. And friends, we understand that all of this is just not isolated happenings that is taking place. There really is a global plan, and it is one that is anti-God. It is one that is certainly opposed to God's plan for us as well. Okay, we've got you back with us here, Alex.
Yeah, sorry about that, Jim.
Great. Okay, so we're just talking about that North American Union, so to speak. We saw that under Bush 43 as well. I was just talking about that here while in your absence. But I'd like you to comment on one. We've got the UK election coming up on July 4th, I understand. And we've got a critical election here in the United States. And what do you see as being at stake as it relates to our own presidential election coming up this November?
Well, there's a lot at stake in our presidential election coming up soon, and the contrast is really very, very clear. You don't have to agree with everything Donald Trump has ever said to recognize that he is articulating a vision that is radically different than what Joe Biden is calling for on the issue of globalism, on the issue of sovereignty, on the issue of the role of government, on the issue of the place of faith and Christianity within our system of government and our culture. I wish Donald Trump would do a few different things. I wish he would apologize for Operation Warp Speed. I wish he would take a much harder line on the killing of the unborn and the LGBT agenda and things like this. But ultimately, he is publicly calling for a restoration of what made America great. And, I think everybody listening to this program, at least the Christians listening to this program, understands that what that was really the blessings of God that came as a direct result of our people's faithfulness and obedience to God. And the fact that God really used the United States in such an amazing way to take the gospel to every corner of the world. So I think voters this year have a very, very clear distinction in terms of which way we're going to go. Whether we'll have an honest election is another matter entirely. At this point, I would not be willing to say with any degree of confidence at all that we can trust the results of the election. I do believe there will be significant efforts to cheat. And I do believe that if the Democrats manage to get another 4 years in the White House, potentially with control of Congress, but even without it, the United States that we have known and loved over all these years will probably cease to exist. And, it's very sad what's happening. Mm-hmm. But we see a very deliberate agenda to take down our country, and this election is going to make a very big difference one way or the other.
A quick break, and we'll come back to your phone calls here, friends. Our lines are packed here for Crosstalk. Alex Newman is with us today. Again, websites, thenewamerican.com and libertysentinel.org. Back in 1 minute here on Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewtube.com. I've been teaching through the book of Revelation, the third of the seven letters to the various churches, which I think represent any given fellowship at any given time throughout the church age that we can learn from. You'll find these various issues in various New Testament fellowships, I think, at any given point. And I think this is the instructive nature of these letters. Well, in this third letter to the church of Pergam or Pergamos, depending on the translation, we find that the Lord is commending those who are standing up strong. They are standing up strong, even though they live in a community that houses the seat of Satan. Satan lives there. Well, there's many things we can learn from that, but one is the worship of leaders. People had to worship their leaders, emperor worship. And if they didn't, they could be killed or deprived of civil liberties. Is that coming again? The worship of a world leader, and those signify their worship by the mark of the beast? It is coming.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Alex Newman, our guest here today, with a survey of world affairs, an overview of what's taking place. And yes, I know there's much more that we have not gotten to, but friends, at the same time, we see change is possible. And we think about the scripture that says, if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and turn from their wicked ways, you know, and seek God's face, he will hear from heaven, forgive their sin, and heal their land. We've got Jim calling from Wisconsin. Hi, Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, gentlemen. I've got a comment and a couple questions. I'll try to make it quick. First of all, in the Bible, it talks about a watchman on the wall, and if you see danger coming and you don't alarm the people, their blood will be on your hands. I've had information from a couple gentlemen for like 25 years about Russia and China and North Korea, and it's just like I got pages and pages, and I'm just wondering if your guest has heard if either one of these names, Henry Gruber or Dimitri Dudeman.
Yes, very familiar with Dudeman and what he warned about. He basically said that the Russians and the Chinese would be nuking the United States of America, and this would be the judgment of God on the United States. You know, I cannot confirm that those are accurate, but I'm very familiar with him. And frankly, it wouldn't be surprising at all to me if God used foreign powers to nuke the United States as a judgment for the wickedness that has come forth out of our country.
And Jim, you had a question.
One more. Yeah, another quick question. What's preventing us from going back to paper ballots?
Mostly the entrenched political power of both the Republican and Democrat parties and the special interests behind them. There really is, in my opinion, no excuse not to go back to paper ballots. Most Americans have already said they do not have confidence in the elections anymore. Most Americans, a majority of Americans, believe that the last election, the 2020 election, was marred by massive levels of fraud. There's absolutely no good reason not to go back to the system that worked, that people can have confidence in, unless you were trying to manipulate the results of the election. We could easily get the vote tallies in by the end of the night like we used to do before we had these machines. So I can't come up with any valid excuse why we're not doing this, except somebody wants the opportunity to be able to manipulate the election results.
Thank you, Jim, for your call. Ed is next in Tennessee. Ed, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. My question here is, how will the war of Ezekiel 38 and 39 affect the affairs of the world?
Okay. I don't know if you're prepared to answer that at all, Alex.
Well, I'm familiar with Ezekiel 38 mm-hmm. and 39, and I also know that there's a lot of debate among theologians and experts in eschatology about what precisely that is. So I would say I'm not qualified to answer that. Frankly, I don't know that anybody is. I mean, you know, even people who have spent decades studying the Bible, studying the Scripture, studying prophecy, there's great disagreement among them about what precisely that means. I think, like many of the prophecies in the Bible, it will be perfectly clear in retrospect, maybe even to some of us while it's happening. But, you know, right now I don't feel qualified to offer a proper answer to that. But thank you for the question.
Thank you, Ed. And also the timing of when that will take place as well. So there's a lot there. And we've had other programs with Bible prophecy guest on, and certainly we'll welcome your call at that time. Mac in Florida, you're on the air.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you very much for what you do, and you really appreciate it. And Alex, I'd like to say I saw you here in Pensacola recently, and you and Bradley Dean, and I was amazed at what you all talked about, and I was especially impressed with your ideas on the social emotional learning stuff. Mm-hmm. And I have two grandchildren still in schools here in Fort Walton, and wondering when you're going to come there or even to Destin. So you know, we'd love to have you, or we'd love to make room for you somewhere too. So I'll just hang out and listen to your comments on SEL, please.
Thank you. And very briefly, because we're dealing with world affairs here today, but I know, Alex, you're very entrenched in the educational arena in SEL. You've issued great warnings regarding it.
Yeah, well, thank you, brother, for the call. I appreciate that. And, you know, SEL is related to world affairs in a kind of tangential way. Right now, all over the world, the government education systems, which are all being united under UNESCO, are preparing children to live under an antichrist global political, economic, and religious system. UNESCO actually has an agency that is just steeped in the occult. It's based in India, that is working to inject SEL into schools all over the planet. And suffice it to say, the people who are leading these efforts, I've got videos of them publicly talking about how they're communicating with spiritual entities, with alleged dead people. And so all you need to do is go to the scripture and you'll find out these are not, you know, ascended masters. These are not dead ancestors. These are demons. And so this stuff comes from the pit of hell. Forget the marketing and the wrapper. Recognize that this is wickedness. And we as Christians, we as parents must protect our children from this.
Mark is next in Monroe. You're on the air.
Yeah, I think of Vladimir Putin. He has the upper hand in manipulating the Biden administration, which is why I think he endorsed Biden. I think he's got so much dirt on Biden, Obama, and the Clintons in the past, the real Russian collusion, which in my opinion explains why the U.S. is bending over backward to fund Ukraine in hope of taking out Russia. Hmm. That's my opinion.
Okay. Any response, Alex?
Yeah, I do believe there's something there. You know, when you look at Putin, I did an in-depth investigation into Putin in 2014 for the New American Magazine. I encourage people to read some of these articles. Me and William Jasper put together a cover story package. He has been very, very closely connected to Western globalists for decades. He was a young global leader of the World Economic Forum, which is Klaus Schwab's organization. He and Henry Kissinger, who was recruited by David Rockefeller, one of the architects of the New World Order, they were very, very close to each other. Putin writes about this in his own autobiography. You know, Kissinger would go over there and he'd receive awards from Putin and from the Kremlin. It's really an interesting story that the media has not done a good job of telling to the American people. But I do believe that Putin is closely connected in many ways to the Western power brokers, the Western establishment, if you will. He's also a direct descendant, a direct heir to the mass-murdering communist authorities that supposedly collapsed from 89 to 91. And so there's a lot there, and the fake media is unfortunately doing a terrible job of giving the American people the information they need to come to sensible conclusions.
Thank you for the call here, Mark, and we're sorry to others on hold. We have run out of time. Alex Newman, our guest today, and friends, just be mindful, though, that the kings of this earth conspire all against God, really. It really is a spiritual battle that's in, that God's will is going to be done here on earth as it is in heaven. Alex, thanks for being with us today.
Amen. Thank you so much, Jim. God bless you.
And friends, again, the websites, thenewamerican.com and libertysentinel.org. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.